The Bible Study on KFUO Radio is underwritten by Concordia Seminary, St. Louis, centered in the gospel of Jesus Christ in faithfulness, servanthood, responsiveness, and excellence, Concordia Seminary. Well, good morning. It's your turn on Ask the Pastor on the Bible Study, a broadcast ministry of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod on KFUO Radio. Our guest today, representing Concordia Seminary, where he works in admissions, Pastor Kyle Castings. Good morning.
Good morning, Paul. How are you?
Hey, doing great. Good to have you here today.
It's good to be back.
And I guess you're a busy guy these days, huh?
It's been, well, I tell you what, the whole summer has been a busy summer, working with recruitment here at the seminary, but also we took a trip up to Camp Luther in North Wisconsin and served as pastor for the week up there. Great time up
you,
there.
You don't just sit in an office with the window open waiting for people to walk up and register.
You know what? We can do that, though. funny enough, I've, in my office, my current office in Loughborough Hall here at the seminary, I have a typical 1950s window opens outward.
Really?
And I've labeled that the burger window because I've had so many students, prospective students, just come right in, tuck themselves up under the window, and we've carried on 20 minutes, 25 minutes worth of conversation through that window.
So you even took recruitment on the road. Where was that?
Well, it was up in Three Lakes, Wisconsin, up at Camp Luther, and really was more in service to them and their family camp, but there were certainly opportunities. There's always opportunities to encourage men to consider pastoral ministry, women to consider the diaconate, and and really church work in general, professional church work in general.
And do a lot of these new recruits come from Lutheran colleges and universities around the country?
A lot of them do, that's for sure. At the same time, we have a lot who come through state schools, and of course, we also have a lot of second career students who may have attended a Concordia at one point in time, but also have gone to other private schools or state schools, et cetera.
Does that mean you also get involved with long distance schools too? The the distance training.
As far as
they go through your office to register for that.
The we do work with the specific ministry pastor program. We talk with those congregations, districts, persons who are interested in that particular route and try to help them, give them good direction on what really it means to study to be a pastor in their current location, and we do have quite a few students in that particular program.
Is Hebrew and Greek mandatory?
Hebrew and Greek are mandatory for the Master of Divinity students.
I see.
And then for one of our other residential programs, the certificate route, for those students who are a little bit older, over 35, and have had some good experience within the church, their only requirement as far as language is Greek. And so that's really the requirements for the residential programs. For a distance program, there is no particular requirement for languages, but
why is that?
Well, that is a good question.
Because I interviewed a young man who's going to be ordained in October. And he was doing the distance learning program. What is it? EII?
That's another one of our distance programs, EIIT, the Ethnic Immigrant Institute of Theology.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And he said he wasn't required to do Hebrew and Greek.
Right. It really is a requirement of a particular academic program, and here, at least, that particular program is Master of Divinity. But it is, of course, even for those students who are going through SMP or another route, personally, I would highly encourage that they take that study upon themselves, working with a pastor, working with iTunes University. If you go to our website and click on iTunes, we have the full Greek class, the full Hebrew class right there. And as we've done
a little bit... And is that free and open to the public?
It's free, open to the public. And actually, I would encourage the public just to check out www.csl.edu. Click on iTunes U and just take a look at all the offerings there. Again, there's Greek, there's Hebrew, there's Christian doctrine, there's some of our convocations, some of the lectures, there's Hebrew club, Greek club, our lectionary at lunch. There's a lot of great pieces found there on iTunes U.
Got a wealth of information here and expertise on this campus.
There's a wealth of, you know, there that is
resources.
That couldn't be more correct. There's a wealth of resources, expertise on this campus, and there are opportunities for the church and the world to come to this campus and study here in different kind of things like the Lay Bible Institute. But iTunes U is an outstanding way that we can take that expertise, take those resources, and just give them out to the whole world. And when we've received comments worldwide about the benefit of iTunes U.
And I understand even our Roman Catholic cousins are on campus these days. I saw a sign for Glenn and Kenrick parking. I understand that their seminary is under renovations, and they're utilizing our library here.
Yep, they are definitely undergoing some renovations down there. And I, quite frankly, I pulled into campus yesterday afternoon after doing some work over at my church and missed the sign and all of a sudden realized, oh, I'm in the Kenrick Glennon parking. Well, I better get my seminary straight here. But
so anyway, a cooperative reaching out.
It's great that we can be able to do that. And, of course, in the same right just to the north of us, we're working with Wydown Middle School right now as their new school is being built over here on Wydown. We're working with them so they can come over here and do their physical education classes and things like that on our field. So,
that's who's out there playing.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Now, you made a reference to your church. Where is that?
That's Mount Calvary over in Brentwood. I'm serving as one of the vacancy pastors over there and having a great time doing it.
Man, you're staying extra busy then.
Extra busy. And I just thank the Lord that the people over there at Mount Calvary are continuing to put up with me and sometimes our 95-minute services.
Story from the Wall Street Journal. This is yesterday. As Congress scrutinizes every nook and cranny of the budget for possible revenue, a surprising court decision is allowing clergy members to buy or live in multiple homes tax-free. The U.S. tax court ruled that Phil Driscoll, an ordained minister and Grammy Award-winning trumpeter who went to prison for tax evasion, didn't owe federal income taxes on $408,638 provided to him by his ministry to buy a second home on a lake near Cleveland, Tennessee. Under a provision of the tax code known as the parsonage allowance. Are you familiar with that?
Yeah, I am.
First passed in 1921, an ordained clergy member may live tax-free in a home owned by his or her religious organization or receive a tax-free annual payment to buy or rent a home if the congregation approves. The tax ruling, made final in March, extends the parsonage allowance to an unlimited number of homes which may be owned either by the religious organization or the clergy member. In a 7-6 ruling, a panel of tax court judges sided with Mr. Driscoll's argument that the word home is equivalent to homes, just as child is interpreted to mean children elsewhere in the tax code. The Internal Revenue Service declined to comment on the decision. In May, the agency appealed it to Federal Appeals Court in Atlanta. $400,000 home?
Yeah, I'm never going to see that, Paul. But I don't have a problem with that.
I see a little country church and a little country house right next door to it, and that's pretty much what has been observed through the years.
Right.
Nothing
right.
Like this in organized religion, is it?
I'm just saying, personally speaking, here, I'm happy with a very humble lifestyle, and I don't think I've ever used it in any of my recruitment spiels that one needs to come to Concordia Seminary in order to prosper financially in life.
Yeah.
So that's part of the transparency that we offer when we encourage others to look at this particular path.
You will be enriched, but perhaps you won't get rich.
yeah, maybe even take the word perhaps out and say this is the reality here. But at the same time, the rewards, that may sound like a cliche, but the rewards are overwhelming.
Now, I did that story as an introduction to this next piece, which is a think piece that appears on the Huffington Post. And apparently they have guest theologians from around the country submit a thought per week. And Greg Carey is professor of New Testament theology at Lancaster Theological Seminary. And the headline reads, Matthew 16:21-28. Jesus has no part-time disciples. So can we get into this article, and perhaps you can stop me where you'd like to jump in and comment on something that's said in this piece?
Absolutely. And just to begin with, Paul, here, I would have no beef with the title itself, and we can talk about that more in a second.
Good.
We're not part-time anything. And we may need to broaden our definition of disciple, but part-time is not going to be part of that definition. But we can get into that more as we get into the article.
Greg states, Matthew 16:21-28 confronts us with the gap between Jesus' gruesome fate and our own modest discipleship. Jesus' verbs say it all: deny the self, take up the cross, follow Christ. Moreover, only in losing one's life, the primary meaning of apolemy, is that it?
That's correct.
Is to destroy, one may save it. And Jesus apparently means it. Judgment, he says, involves repaying people according to what they have done. At this moment, we are hearing Matthew's distinctive voice. Salvation comes not to those who call Jesus Lord, but to those who do what he says. The Great Commission involves teaching people to obey everything that I have commanded you. It's a matter of life and death. Disciples are to walk Jesus' grim path. So we face the chasm between Jesus' call to discipleship and our own lives as part-time volunteers for the gospel.
Let's just stop there, Paul, for a second as we go back into that first paragraph. He's referring to Matthew 7 there, where Jesus says that we do the word. And of course, the Lord, the salvation that we have, of course, comes from Jesus' salvific act on the cross, period. Mm-hmm. And from that, though, comes a new life for us, and in a new life, a response to this wonderful gift. And in that response to this wonderful gift, we do the word. We now, by the transformation that has occurred in us by Christ, we think differently, we act differently. I treat you differently, you treat me differently. We're doers of the word. One may ask, okay, now Christ has made me his new creation, so what? Now what?
That doesn't mean you punch out and go home from your vocation. Luther would say you could do what you're suggesting through your vocation.
Yeah, and then that comes then to the second paragraph you read there. So we face the chasm between Jesus' call to discipleship and our own lives as part-time volunteers for the gospel. Now, see, if one just considers their discipleship as, well, I serve with the men's ministry group at church, and I do that for 3 or 4 hours a week, and that's mm-hmm. that's it. What that's offering then a very limited definition of what a disciple is.
Is that compartmentalizing discipleship?
Well, I think it's okay to compartmentalize the things that we do as disciples, but maybe a better way to put that is to consider those all as our vocations, all as our callings as children of God. So maybe it is the men's ministry, but in that drive home from church, after you wrap up that act at church and are driving home, you're not released from God's call for your life. So I would argue, being a volunteer for the gospel, being a disciple of Christ, is a full-time thing that you're engaged in, even as you're driving home. Let's go this route, Paul. Even being a responsible citizen on the roadways, keeping your eyes open to those things around you, to the hazards around you, to people in need, a car that has a flat tire, a man off in the ditch. The Lord is always engaging us in what he's doing through us as his servant. So I would completely dismiss this whole idea of part-time. Mm-hmm. We're not part-time. Every single second of our lives, the Lord has something for us to do. Now, maybe we can get into this later. Then the question becomes, as you end your day and you're in bed and you look back in your day, you ask yourself, did I complete?
Did I do enough?
Did I do enough what the Lord has given me to do?
Yeah.
And of course, the answer is going to be no. But that doing enough is not contributing to the cross. It's simply that God has given you this to do, and you had omitted doing that. God gave you that to do, and you omitted doing that. And so Luther equates, let's go back here, to Matthew 16, taking up one's cross. Martin Luther equates one's vocation to their cross. Because as one ends their day, as one reflects back upon that day, they look at it and say, I am a poor, miserable sinner. And that's the cross, to realize I have, and I'm going to speak personally, I have not been the father that I should be. I have not been the husband that I should be. I have not been the admissions counselor that I should be. I didn't treat that applicant with the due respect. And you look back, and Luther said, that's our cross, because we realize our sinful nature, even in the things that we try to do so well. And then we realize we fail. But instead of, at the end of the day, having that lead us to despair, being distraught and depressed, Martin Luther says that the cross then leads us to our faith, to the faith that God has given to us. And then that faith God has given to us as gift grabs hold of God's promise that we are forgiven. And then that moves us forward for a new day as God's new creation. And so I would argue taking up one's cross and following Jesus Christ simply means it's almost this simple yet this complicated. It simply means doing what God has called you to do. And again, not simply in an occupation kind of way. An occupation is a vocation, but it's not your only one.
Yeah, because I was going to ask, what do you say to the person who's unemployed right now?
They have a call. They have a call. Now, I think this is the difficult thing for my position, for Reverend Reedy, for Reverend Becker, as we're working with people who are considering the pastoral ministry, is, we could tell them, and it would be truthful, that they could do anything. That there's any occupation, anything that they could do godly, would be God's call, would be God's vocation for them. But now the difficulty comes down to discernment. And so what do I say to the person who is unemployed, who feels that their entire identity has been ripped away because it's all been built, and understandably so, has all been built on a career that they had for 15, 20, 25 years.
And perhaps they're thinking their vocation has ended.
It's gone. And the strong word of comfort I can give there, and in total confidence, is that vocation may be gone, but other vocations are still there. Now the challenge is to discern what that might be. But at the same time, Paul, though, I think that's the challenge for all of us. I see myself getting so caught up with the busyness of life that I probably miss thousands of vocations a day because I'm so focused on, I got to get over there, and I got to get this done, and I have a sermon I need to write, and I develop this tunnel vision, and I fail to see all of the vocations in the periphery. And that's reason for a prayer to God, that God would slow us down and allow us to see all of that he calls us to do, all of those people around us that he uses us to treat.
The big picture. So Greg goes on to write, few Christians abandon everything for the gospel's sake. Most of us simply fit our Christianity into the open spots on our calendars. But in this passage, Jesus links the life of discipleship with his own path. So as an example, he says, this spring, Mark and Catherine Richt sold their second home, a lakefront property valued at just below $2 million. Best known as head football coach at the University of Georgia, Mark Richt has earned, if you can call it that, more than $25 million since taking that position in 2001. He also openly professes his Christian faith and engages in a variety of ministries. The Richt sold this property. You want to stop there?
No, great.
Yeah,
no.
Yeah. The Richts sold this property so that they could give to anti-poverty work. Mark Richt attributed the decision to the dynamic book The Hole in Our Gospel by Richard Stearns, the president of World Vision. Named the Christian Book of the Year for 2010, this resource introduces readers to the harsh reality of global and local poverty, pressing the question of how Christians should respond to human suffering in the light of the gospel. If you're interested, by the way, a fully resourced curriculum, DVDs, daily exercises, study guides, and the like, supports the book for congregational and small group use. Some of us might not be all that impressed by Richt's sacrifice. What does it mean to sacrifice $2 million on an income of more than $3 million per year? Anyway, for my part, Greg writes, I am impressed. Catherine and Mark Richt clearly understand that the gospel not only blesses our souls, it also calls us to service that will enrich our lives and bring forth our resources. Following Dietrich Bonhoeffer, my denomination's contemporary statement of faith confesses the cost and joy of discipleship. The Richts are not just giving money. This summer, they've joined World Vision in a trip to Honduras devoted to the construction of water wells. I fully trust the Richts are experiencing joy in their service.
Okay. Okay.
So it sounds like their motivation's intact. Now, some people do the philanthropy because they feel guilty about having so much.
Some do it because of that motivation, possibly, or a worry that the cross hasn't done enough, or their life is such that it's outside of the reach of the cross. Paul, I look at this from my the writer says, for my part, I'm impressed. Well, fine, and thank the Lord that he can use this couple in this way. But I have to say that I am no more impressed by this endeavor than by a mother who changes her baby's diapers.
Mm.
Or by a young couple who's awake at 2 o'clock in the morning trying to figure out how to get their newborn to stop crying. Huh. And is the Lord working through this couple? Absolutely. Is the Lord working through the resources that this couple has, this blessing? Sure. But at the same right, it's not a graduation here, that they're somehow serving better.
It's not about quantity.
Then, yeah, you know, the quantity or the quality. Because, again, that mother who is up in the middle of the night, that father who is there working long hours of the day taking care of the needs of the family, I would say that is God working through them to take care of the needs of those little ones.
Now, somebody listening might say, but they could do so much more. They're not doing enough.
Well,
where do you draw the line when it comes to this kind of a good deed?
I understand what you're saying, Paul, and we can go back to, we can step back to the conversation we had a few minutes ago and say, well, this couple here, at the end of the day, if they're honest with each other and look back at the end of the day and the $2 million that's gone forth from their bank account, they would also have to say, in honesty, we haven't done enough because we're still sinners. And then you have to ask the question, well, what are we trying to do enough for? And if it's to add to the power of the cross, then we know we have something terribly wrong.
Perhaps someone listening would think, well, I should do what Jesus would do and give it all away. We should just give it all away. That's what Jesus would do.
Let's talk more about that.
Okay. It's Open Lines, Ask the Pastor on the Bible Study on KFUO Radio.
One of the core values of Concordia Seminary is faithfulness. Faithfulness to the Bible and the confessions of our church. Many people in America no longer believe that there is absolute truth. They say, you have your opinion, I have mine, all roads lead to heaven. But God has revealed truth. And we teach so that Concordia Seminary graduates will find winsome ways to present the truth.
AMA 50 KFUO is underwritten in part by Reliable Heating and Cooling, with a showroom in the Mid-County Trade Center, 8463 Delport Drive. Reliable Heating and Cooling features Lennox air conditioning and furnace systems and services all brands. Reliable also provides senior discounts. Reliable Heating and Cooling, serving you from North, Mid, and West County exchanges. The next time you call Reliable at 423-3535, please thank them for being an AME 50 KFUO underwriter.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, Executive Director of Life Issues Institute.
It's not unusual for Vogue magazine to do a multi-page spread with a seductive model, wearing heavy makeup, a plunging neckline to the waist, and spiked heels. What is horrifying is the model's only 10 years old. Since then, the little girl has been photographed topless. One blogger wrote, "This isn't edgy, it's inappropriate and creepy." Another observed the girl had the facial expression of a child in illegal child pornography. The hypersexualization of little girls is tragic. A priority of groups like the International Planned Parenthood Federation is ending so-called age-based discrimination of children's sexuality. Are you surprised, then, that Planned Parenthood's been caught hiding the sexual abuse of young girls?
For more information, visit our website at lifeissues.org. And stay informed, more informed than you've ever been.
Liberty in Libya. I'm Steve Coleman with today's Religion Roundup. The overthrow of Libyan leader Muammar Gaddafi is spurring hopes for religious liberty in the Muslim nation. Todd Nettleton of Voice of the Martyrs says converting Libyans to Christianity has been illegal under Gaddafi, under the new regime.
We hope there is some type of religious freedom, at least the acknowledgement that Libyans can be something besides Muslim. They could be Christian.
The scout troop at Lutheran Church of Our Redeemer in Kokomo, Indiana, is planning a memorial for scout leader Arthur Anderson. Authorities say Anderson was leading two boys on a hike when a man emerged from a nearby home and stabbed him to death. Assistant Scoutmaster Alan Harvath says that while the scouts were unhurt,
the boys were right there when this happened, so the trauma they're dealing with, I think we're all praying for their ability to deal with it, and we're praying for, obviously, Art and his family.
A 22-year-old man was arrested and charged with murder. I'm Steve Coleman.
The Essence airs weekdays from 1 to 3 p.m. on KFUO Radio. Sacred and classical music, reflecting the beauty of creation and the great heritage of the Church throughout the ages. Join us weekdays as we explore and experience the great inspiration provided by some great classics. Music for your daily walk.
Listen to The Essence weekdays from 1 till 3 on KFUO Radio, underwritten by Lutheran Senior Services, older adults living life to the fullest.
Hi, I'm Pastor Doug Nicely. Several years ago now, Dr. James Dobson wrote a book titled Love Must Be Tough, and that dealt with Christians dealing with conflict and with brokenness. His point was that love was the exact opposite of what we would call revenge. And revenge is not really tolerable in the Christian faith. We'll discuss that in connection with Romans chapter 12 this week on In His Steps.
In His Steps, Saturday at noon on KFUO Radio.
Let's ask the pastor on the Bible study, and I apologize, we ended up running a rerun of the religion news. Basically, Steve Coleman's religion report today only dealt with the Washington National Cathedral and the fact that it's closed to visitors after the East Coast earthquake damaged three of the four pinnacles atop the main tower and left cracks in the church's structure. So you didn't really miss anything there. We've been talking about that all morning here on KFUO Radio. Phones are open at 505-7850-1800-730-2727. Let's see which direction Dave wants to take this discussion with Pastor Kyle Kastens.
Hello, interesting discussion you're having about wealth and being a Christian. I just want to make a comment. I believe most of the world lives in filth and squalor, poverty-stricken people. And I look at, say, a professional athlete who claims to be a Christian, and when a new contract comes up, like Mr. Pujols, wanting $30 million a year for so many years, it seems to me that where your treasure is, there will your heart be also. It's easy to claim to be a Christian when everything goes good for you and you're making millions of dollars a year. But what about people who live in poverty-stricken countries? They don't make that kind of money. They can barely get by, but it just seems like it's such a shallow response to me anyway. It's just my comment.
Well, David, and it brings me to a question that I asked Pastor Kastens during the break. I mean, where's the happy medium between two extremes, Mother Teresa and Joyce Meyer? Where are we supposed to be in there?
Where are you supposed to be in there?
Yeah, knowing that so much of the world is so poor.
Well, I suppose Christ might answer that on Judgment Day. Myself, not being infallible, I just look at the external aspects of it, and I look at a Joyce Meyer or an Albert Pujols. I'm not aware how much Joyce Meyer makes, but I'm sure it's quite a bit.
And I should be fair. Joyce Meyer Ministries does a lot of work in poor neighborhoods right here in St. Louis.
Yeah, I suppose she does. I guess I'm looking at the person's personal life, how they mm-hmm. might live. A lot of them do it for tax write-offs, to get benefit from taxes, too. I would assume that works. Most of these rich athletes buy restaurants and they get tax loopholes to where they don't have to pay more taxes.
They have foundations.
Yeah. But that's the way I look at it. It just seems shallow. I don't know. It just seems shallow to me that when a person, like a very wealthy athlete, they want more and more. Well, and like I say, I don't know what they do in their private life, but Jesus said, you know, you can't serve two masters. You can't serve God and money. You know, it just seems like most people are greedy for that. It's just my personal opinion.
Thanks for the call.
Okay.
So, should we Christians be taking a vow of poverty to do it right? Follow Jesus? Be like him?
I think, Paul, as we had discussed earlier, as you asked the question,
Is
there a happy medium here? And what Christ has called us to be is his disciple. And are there rich disciples? Are there disciples who prosper? Absolutely. And are there really poor disciples in this world? And that's the point the caller made. Absolutely. What has the Lord called us to be? And I think one good place to turn is into Luke chapter 10, where we look at the parable, Jesus' parable of the Good Samaritan, and talk about what it is to be a neighbor. And so instead of focusing on what one has or what one's resources may be, but look at what it means that the Lord has called us to be a neighbor, to go and do likewise. To show mercy, and one like Albert Pujols, certainly, as the Lord works through him, can show mercy, and one like Mother Teresa, through whom the Lord worked, can certainly and did certainly show mercy. So I'd like to focus in that direction. Now, you can't serve both God and money. Well, that's true, but at the same time, we can turn just about anything in our life into an idol that can separate us from our from what we do, what we've been called to do, and so instead of serving the Lord and having him work through us, our focus is on what can we gain for ourselves, not for our neighbor, again, not for my little baby who's crying, but what can I gain for myself. And that's not the mark of a disciple.
505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Jan, you're on KFUO Radio with Pastor Kyle Kastens. Good morning.
Good morning, Pastor.
Good morning, Jan.
I didn't hear most of your conversation, so I apologize. But what I did hear made me think of 1 John 3, verses 16 through 18. By this we know love, that he laid down his life for us, mm-hmm. and we ought to lay down our lives for the brothers. But if anyone has the world's goods and sees his brother in need yet closes his heart against him, how does God's love abide in him? And I think about Roman, where Romans, I think it's 12, where he tells us to think about ourselves with sober judgment. And in relation to our gifts, whether it's intellect or resources or the spirit of prophecy, why has he gifted us in these ways? How do we seek to glorify him with that gift? And me personally, I struggle sometimes with, especially like my college classmates, they're just fabulously successful and making lots of money and, you know, wheeling and dealing and whatnot. And here I am on this job. You know what I'm saying?
Right, right.
And I have had times where I'm scared for this job. I'm scared that I may lose it. So how is God using me in this capacity when, you know, it's like people that make all this money and they have no trouble, they have no reversals, and I'm trying to be faithful and I'm struggling from paycheck to paycheck.
Right.
So, you know, there, on a human level, we question God's wisdom. You know, right. I like whenever, what was it? Fiddler on the Roof. Would it disturb some vast eternal plan if I were a wealthy man? So.
Well, you're leading us to another point we wanted to make that's mentioned in this article by Craig Carey, Jesus Has No Part-Time Disciples, and that is that perhaps some of those successful friends of yours are Christians, and they believe in the prosperity gospel.
Yeah.
That God wants them to be happy, and he wants them to be rich.
Well, you know, we need to be careful that we don't look in God's word to confess or to confirm what we have in our mind. I believe that it's a lot more important to God that we are holy as opposed to happy or wealthy. And, you know, I think about, I heard this story a couple of years ago. There was an Indonesian Christian who was a janitor at this Muslim girls' school. And some bombers broke in, and he stood in that door of the school and blew himself and the bombers up. So what I'm getting to, I guess, is the fact that does that wealth assure you of some greater place in glory? And I think Scripture is clear that it does not. It makes your temporal existence comfortable, but what about Lazarus and the rich man?
You're right on, Jen. Jen, you have given us about another 2 hours worth of material here to discuss.
You know,
so I thank you for that.
I was at a funeral yesterday. My sister-in-law died suddenly, and you know, I was so hurt about that. But I think it's Isaiah 50. Where he talks about it's 57, where he talks about the righteous dies and no one lays it to heart. Devout men are taken away while no one understands, for the righteous man is taken away from calamity. He enters into peace. And for some strange reason, that gave me comfort. you know, good people die, but the righteous man is taken away from calamity to that peace that God has for us.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I just pray that the people of God get that peace that passes understanding, whether we're unemployed, underemployed, trying to ask God for guidance and wisdom on handling that fabulous wealth. And thank you so much, Pastor.
Thank you, Jan. I just want to make a... Well, I have a lot of comments to make here, and I don't know if we have time for all of them. But one is just... What God has given us in Jesus Christ is given us because of who He is, not because we're rich or because we're poor or He's motivated just to feel sorry for us, but the compassion that He does have for us, the love that He does have for us, comes because He is God. He's the God of love, and He showers that down. He gives that gift to the rich, the poor. People of all stations in life, and that peace that surpasses all understanding, it doesn't go to the highest bidder. You know, if we go back to the Beatitudes, blessed are the poor in spirit. Why are they blessed? Well, they are because now the King of Kings, the reign of Jesus, the Christ, the kingdom of heaven is at hand. And so everything that He has come to bring is going to be given to them. So they have every reason to rejoice. And I also wanted to make a comment here. Jan was reading from 1 John chapter 3, verse 17. But if anyone has the world's goods and sees his brother in need, yet closes his heart against him, how does God's love abide in him? And Paul, I think that's just a good question, again, in general, to ask ourselves as we go in this life, through this life, about this life that God has given us, is how does God's love abide in me? From the context here in 1 John chapter 3, that the implied answer is, well, it doesn't if he's focused on the things of this world. But I think we could take that question and, again, apply that to our lives. How does God's love abide in me this day? Is it just at my workplace, or is it just in my home, or is it just at those 3 hours that I serve at church? This is part of that discernment that we need to take a look at, and is how does God use me as a neighbor to everyone with whom I come in contact.
505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Larry, you're on KFUO with Pastor Kyle Kastens.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Yes.
Good morning.
You know, as Lutherans, we often forget the woman that gave the two mites. And what did Christ tell her? You've given everything
right. Because
you gave with your heart. So for us to sit here and kind of make a condemnation of Albert Pujols, I don't think people really know a lot about Albert Pujols' private life. He actually comes from an island south of Florida, somewhere down in there, and he goes down there and he built a hospital. I think he built a school.
In the Dominican Republic, correct.
Right. He provides the children with an athletic field, all their spikes, their bats, their balls, but he doesn't make a big deal out of this. That's why people don't know. But I've seen a special on him, and for us to say, you know, Albert Pujols is being greedy when he wants, hey, he might be the best hitter that's come down the pike in a long time, but enough for Albert Pujols. You know, if you go way back in history to the early part of the 20th century, there was a Baptist minister, I think his name was Rauschenbosch or Rauschenbach, something like that. And he was the originator of the social gospel. And he said that Christ only died on the cross for four specific sins. So if you minimize sin and Christ's vicarious work, it leads you directly to a social gospel. Mm-hmm. And in my opinion, the social gospel, which according to Paul in Galatians, the first chapter in Galatians, if any man comes to you with anything other, and this social gospel is something other than, I think this social gospel is one of the biggest deterrents in the Christian church today, because it leads you to all kind of a variant of teachings. And I would like the pastor's comment, and I will hang up and listen. Thank you.
Thanks, Larry.
Larry, thank you for that, for all those comments. And again, with the issue with Pujols, that's what we said before. Who is Pujols? He's one who is affluent. He's also one in whom the Lord has put some really fantastic gifts. Is he not a servant because he's rich? Well, absolutely not. He is the Lord's servant, the Lord's child, and he obviously serves as a neighbor to those in need. So, again, it's I think we oversimplify it if we do it rich poor thing. Or the flip side too is, well, those people who are poor, as the one caller said, living in squalor. Well. But maybe they've done something wrong. See, that this is a temptation for some to say too, they're not living their lives as they should. They're not doing enough, because if they were, then God would bless them. Well, that's also false.
Yeah,
obviously.
But then Jesus also said there will always be poor, didn't he?
That there always be poor amongst us, and we have to remember that the true treasure, as Luther said, the true treasure of the church is the gospel of Jesus Christ. We focus there, and we have that in the hands. Mm-hmm. Again, whether our hands are the hands of a rich man or the hands of a poor man, you always have the poor amongst you, Jesus said, but you won't always have me. And of course, you know, that was the point in that context. Yeah, the whole thing, I think, comes down to this question, and to lay the foundation here, it's a matter of, do I have I been called by God? And the answer is yes. If you're a Christian, you've been called by God. Now, again, the difficulty, the challenge is discerning to what as one goes through the daily life. And as we see with Albert Pujols, I think we see in his life that he treats, he treats people seriously, and he treats their needs seriously. And one of his calls is to go down to the Dominican Republic and serve. But at the same time, another one of his calls is to be a good baseball player. That is also his vocation on that field, to be a servant of Jesus Christ. And in a different way than you could be a servant, or are a servant, in a different way than I am a servant of Jesus Christ.
On the other hand, the reference in this piece written by Greg Carey about people believing in the prosperity gospel, is the prosperity gospel what they call the gospel of glory as opposed to the gospel of the cross?
And see, that's where you're right, and that's where we are. As Larry said, that's where we are as Lutherans. This is where we're good at Lutherans, because we are in the theology of the cross. You don't get glory until you have the cross. It didn't work that way for the Lord Jesus Christ, and it doesn't work that way for us. Mm-hmm. But if you try just to avoid the cross, then you're going into this realm of glory. So I would say, yes, Paul, that it's trying to get into this glory.
And you're just basically using that theology of glory to affirm your own lifestyle.
But that's not where we are. We're in the cross. We are the ones who have, because we're disciples of the Lord, taken up our cross. Mm-hmm. I think Matthew 16 is clear. Now, to address Larry's question about the social gospel, see, it's all going back to this question of doing enough. Can I do enough for the Lord, as if he hasn't done enough? So I have to supplement it, and I have to give him something. Maybe, and then we limit the power of God. Then we limit the power of the cross of Jesus Christ, thinking that we must
contribute,
give back.
And we don't.
And Luther, again, he said, what are your good works good for And he's very bold to say they're not good for God. They're not for God. Then for whom are they? They're for your neighbor. And again, going back, whether rich or poor, what you do, whether that neighbor is that little crying baby or the people of the Dominican Republic, they're still neighbor. Their neighbor. And we're not going to graduate, but again, put that in graduations either, that one neighbor is more important than another neighbor, or one person's service is more important than another's, because, and this is why, because vocation is simply this, it's simply the Lord serving through you. Serving through those, as we say, those first article gifts of the Apostles' Creed. That who gave us these gifts? Who created these things? Well, it's the Lord himself. And now he works through those to have an impact upon the world, to take care of those in the world.
So if we're wondering if we're doing enough, we should search our hearts and perhaps realize that we'll never be able to do enough.
Absolutely. If you're wondering if you are doing enough, don't wonder anymore. The answer is no. Let that, by your faith, turn you to the cross of Jesus Christ and know that he has done enough for you. Your response? Be a neighbor. Mm-hmm. In all joy, be a neighbor, whether rich or poor. And two,
and
whether
that
rich or poor.
That is a key word, isn't it? Response.
Response.
It's a response.
Of all joy. And it's a logical response. It's the reasonable response. Jan referred us to Romans chapter 12. It's reasonable because we've been given the best gift ever, and it's not reasonable for us to do anything less than to respond in great joy, that our lives would be, that all we do in our lives, all God does through us, would be our spiritual act of worship.
Hmm. Pastor Kyle Kastens, you know, before we go, I wanted to share that little vignette that I did with you, with the listeners. I had the opportunity to interview Larry Rice here at KFUO Radio. He attended Concordia Seminary for a right. period of time. And I was working late one night, 10 o'clock, in an urban national food store, and in walks Larry Rice just before closing. And he's haggard and worn, and he's hovering over the top of a frozen food case, pulling out a TV dinner to take home. And I immediately, that sent a message to me that he's the real deal. And I appreciated that. Appreciated knowing that about him. Mm-hmm. Maybe not Mother Teresa, but I think it is hard. He's given it what he can. You know?
And again, we thank the Lord for working through Reverend Rice, and we thank the Lord for working through that mother and all those mothers. I'm going to pick on the mothers whose faces also sometimes look pretty haggard after being up all night with a sick baby.
Changing that diaper.
God bless them.
Pastor Kyle Kastens, thank you. And you're preaching this weekend where?
Thank you, Paul, as always. And I am not preaching this Sunday, but I'm doing Bible study at Mount Calvary Lutheran Church over in Brentwood.
Okay. Thank you for being with us today. Coming up next, Moments of Assurance with Pastor Mark Hawkinson on KFUO Radio. Listen Monday through Friday at this same time on The Bible Study. The Bible Study is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is needed for The Bible Study to continue. Our address is 85 Founders Lane, St. Louis, Missouri, 63105. You can contact us on the web at kfuo.org. Download programs from the Bible Study archives at kfuo.org. The Bible Study is underwritten by Concordia Seminary, St. Louis.